Our next speaker is Kathleen Rowe, who is chair of the Health Sciences Department at San Jose State University.
Thank you. Good afternoon. So I'm Kathleen Rowe. I'm chair of the Health Science Department at San Jose State. I was the MPH program director for about 12 years. There are a bazillion of you out there. I have to get oriented to how many former MPH students are here and their family members are here. So you'll all see yourselves reflected in here. What I'm going to be talking about is kind of where the rubber meets the road and some ways in which our campus MPH program has infused a kind of life into our online program that I might not have ever imagined possible, and then the way that the online program stimulates the campus program. So let me give you a little bit of background first on our setting, and we're very similar to what you just heard. Although we started with our campus program in 1970, there are many graduates of that program here in the room. We were CEF accredited almost immediately and have been continuously. It's a 42-unit program, and it can be done in 2 years, but most students take three, and some, you know, go till the university kicks them out, which means that they can take any combination of courses that they want after they've taken the first year of required minimum courses. Students determine their own pace, and this will be really important when we talk about the difference between campus and online for us. And we work on a 15-week semester system. 90% of our campus program is spent in class with some online assignments, of course, and we use the learning management system of the day is D2L, but we just have been announced we're going to Canvas starting in June. And our distance program, we started in 2008, and it is the same MPH program, exactly the same, but it's just delivered in a completely different format. We will be visited by CEF next year and are very curious and hopeful that they will see the exact representation of essential course objectives, essential program outcomes, essential student learning outcomes, but in a very, very different manner. And it is a cohort-planned curriculum. The old language for that might be a lockstep program. We call it a planned curriculum, meaning the students sign up and the 2 years are laid out exactly. There's no choices, no changes, nothing different. And they go for 24 months, August to August, around the clock. It's serial, one course at a time, 6 to 8 weeks. And they take only one course. They are live online every single Tuesday night of their lives with maybe 10 breaks over 2 years for 3 hours, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And they come to campus three times, the beginning, the middle, and the end, for 4 days. And they graduate in our big tower hall. And they, too, are working on D2L. So there were, many, many design considerations. It took us many years to design this MPH online program. And the two that are relevant for what I'm going to be talking about here is that we wanted to, not only did we need to meet all of CEF's accreditation requirements, and, you know, the program is accredited as one whole, not as two separate programs, so a flaw in one can scuttle the other. So we needed to be very careful that this not jeopardize our CEF accreditation or our reputation in the field. But for the course I'm going to talk about, there were two other design considerations that were very important for us, and one is this. We love our MPH program, and I came from another MPH program. I have been to other MPH programs, and almost always what I see across the country and in my own training is that there's a tremendous anger between faculty and students. Faculty are frustrated with the students. The students are frustrated with the faculty. There's always a spring crisis. Where I went to school, we called it the spring rebellion. There was always something where the students finally had enough and they revolted against the faculty. And our program has never been like that, long before I got there. It's a happy, focused, productive program that people are really proud of. And we wanted to maintain that same sense, even though people would be dispersed across the country and having a very different experience. And the second was that we have, not only do we have the same essential course objectives, we call them essential, meaning that you can change some things about the course, but you can't change this. We have the same essential course objectives, but we also have the same essential products and essential experiences. There are some things that we feel make our program uniquely ours that we wanted to make sure the students experienced in whatever format they were studying. So with most courses, that was pretty easy to do, especially because our graduate courses on campus and on distance are in this three-hour block. And so it was not too difficult, as we just heard there from our two previous speakers. There's so many ways you can replicate group experiences and report backs and out-of-class meetings. But the essential products were just a little more complicated. But 277, those of you that have taken the course know what I'm talking about, 277, Multicultural Communication for Health Professionals, posed a real challenge. This course is based on the concept of cultural humility, and it's a 15-week course. The first 7 weeks are spent looking very self-critically inward to what is my cultural lens, what's my framework, where do I come from, what did my people teach me, how comfortable am I with my original frame of reference, how have I changed that, how has that changed by chance, by circumstance, by immigration, by leaving the culture that didn't let me be who I needed to be, and what is the cultural framework I hold now? And then the second half of the course is, so then what do we do? How does that inform program design, research questions, evaluation, use of media and materials? But the first part of that is deeply introspective and deeply shared between students, and we weren't quite sure that we would be able to do that in an online format. There are a lot of assignments. The students have a bazillion. It's a very busy little class. There's many, many things they have to do, but they're nodding their heads. Yes, it's a very busy class. But the two that I was particularly worried about were the assignment that's called the vignettes and the assignment that's the culture tables. So I'm going to show two examples of how we moved from campus to distance and then back to campus. So the first one is from a Seedlings book to a Seedlings podcast. One of the assignments the students have is around weeks 6 to 7 to write 3 short stories. These are 3-page, 3 to 4-page stories. They have to write one story on a celebration from their life experience. And the celebration needs to be written. It's a short story, so it needs to stand alone as a short story of their own experience, but it reflects and shows through all the adjectives and examples that they use, and it always has to, these have to end like with a moral at the end or with a statement at the end that brings it all home, shows their cultural experience of celebration. And then they write one about learning about health, can be anything, and then the third is a time when they felt different. And then I collect those, I give them feedback, and then sometime between week 10 and 12, they select which ones they want to share with the class, and they resubmit them, and then I compile them. This is the best, most pressured, but most wonderful week of my teaching career, is when I get all of these stories that they want to share, and then I get to figure out the order and how to make a book that, you know, arcs and raises and ends on a certain note. And then I give that book back to them. I compile it, and I get it printed. I put a cover. I write lots of introductory material. And they get their book, and they get it 2 weeks before the end of the semester, and then the last session of the class is their celebration of their own book. And just to give you an idea of how amazing this is, some of the sample titles are The Mangled Ring, God is in the Balloons, Little Red Envelopes, Easter Saturday at the O'Keefe's, The Birds and the Bees, According to My Mother, Saying Goodbye to Grandma, Trying to Catch Infinity, Caught in the Middle, Adjust-O-Meter, Carrot Top, and First Time in the United States of America. Just to give you a feel of what this is. So how in the world do we turn this into a product for students who are only meeting in an online format? And what we came to was they can record their stories. They can write them, and then they can record them. This actually was suggested earlier by a group of students who did it 1 year in the campus class, and they created sort of like a This American Life podcast. And then we didn't ever do that again. But now we do it. And so we have every student record their story as well as turn in the paper copy. And we are now beginning to develop a body of podcasts of these extraordinary stories. And so what distance inspired, because we so rely on the voice and the spoken word spoken to each other in the online format, because we don't use cameras. Our program chooses not to have cameras. It's you're only listening to the voice of each other. These voice products are extraordinarily powerful, and then you hear the voice with their own intonation and their own way of saying things. It's absolutely extraordinary. Okay, the second one I want to share is from Culture Tables to Culture Slides. So this was inspired by the Black Family Health Project in our own county. Many years ago, I went to their annual conference, and in the middle of the room, they had compiled a huge table full of artifacts of Black family life of the past. And so people who were at the conference who are African Americans had so much fun looking at this stuff and reminiscing that comb, that oil, that button hook, because they remembered it from their grandmothers. And people who are not African American had a wonderful introduction to the artifacts of daily life in a time gone by, but that inform their peers and colleagues now. So I thought, well, we should do that in our class. So we have, and this is my culture table, we have in the classroom, we do culture tables every week. Students are assigned randomly at the beginning of the semester. They get 5 minutes to describe what's on whatever they can put on a small tabletop, and we do 2 each session in the campus. And they are specifically to bring anything they want to share from their past or their current life that must show their culture as it informs their biography. This cannot be a here, then I went to school here, and then I did this, and here's my wedding. It can't be that. It's got to be the elements that describe their cultural background. So from mine, and then they do a handout. They do a short handout that identifies five of those elements and describes the power of that artifact in their cultural framework. So from mine, just two examples here would be my passport when I was 15 and got to go to Paris by myself, and my wooden shoes from when I was 7. And so from mine, some of the things that I had identified as central to my cultural orientation is the ability to travel in California. That's a big deal because many of the people we work with are here but don't have the power, don't have the legal ability to travel. So for me, the sense that the world was open to me and I could go anywhere informed my biography, but certainly my cultural framework. And then that's my kindergarten class picture. And what's important there is the multicultural community I grew up in, even in the 1950s in California. And the last one I'll just throw in is that I grew up in a cultural context that believed and honored in the power of the individual. That separated me from context in important ways, makes me different than many of the students I teach today who see themselves grounded in a larger group. I was raised to believe in the individual and the power and responsibility of individuals. So here's just examples of other culture tables people have brought. So you see the incredible beauty and variety. Oh, Musa's going to give me the 1 minute. So the question is, how to do that in an online setting where what we do when we do this, the students actually get up and we physically surround the table and we see the artifacts and we do it right before the 10-minute break so that at the break you can then share with your peers more details of the artifacts. So how can we do that when they're only online? Well, Renata Olison came up with the fabulous idea of let's make slides. Let's have them do culture slides. And so it's the same thing. Every student gets 5 minutes. It's on a timer, which is easier when it's on the computer than when you have to do a gong to cut them off. And the same thing, they get five slides that as much as they want to cram onto those five slides that talk about the core values that inform their biography. So here you can see my culture, and I'd share mine because I don't have permission to share anybody else's. You saw my culture table. Here's my first culture slide with me and my siblings. And examples of what I share in my slides, I think I brought two of them. One is to show my family's generational story, and that what's important here is that for European Americans of that time, my history begins in about 1885. We know absolutely nothing about our family before that. We know nothing about the Irish part of our family, and for Mexican immigrants, for other immigrants, that's how could you not know? How could you not care? Because for those immigrants, life began in the United States, and all the rest is the back. Fully Californian shows the power of acculturation. My grandfather went from being born 1 year after his parents arrived in the United States to being a California cowboy, and the importance of the times in which we live. My dad going in a course of about 2 years from a young, well-kept young man to a good hippie minister.